Hey, so on July 15th, this podcast will have crossed a 9-month benchmark of existence. And as I approach the 1-year mark, I sort of have to evaluate where I am versus where I want to be. And am I where I wish I was? Well, not really, but am I doing okay? Yeah, I would certainly say so. I told myself I was going to give the podcast a good 2 years before I decided on an up or down disposition, and that can be reevaluated as we go along, of course. This is where trying to constantly rejig the podcast to meet different needs comes in. Thus far, I'm basically one time a week, fairly dependable with a digestible episode, and then 6 or 7 days of silence. So what I want to do, and I think I've mentioned this, is I'd like to drop a midweek show, even if it's only, 3, 4, 5 minutes long, with a lot less research involved, if I were capable of 5 days a week as a show, I would do it, but classic economics, the workaday requirements of life, and the fact that this podcast makes zero money so far means I'm outfitted with limited time to compile a subject, then bullet dot the main points, and then record it. So I'm hoping to be posting more frequently to see if this generates a traffic inertia of its own, and thus the midweek posting idea anyway. And I don't know how consistent I'm going to be, but I am going to continue to ask for your support. And thankfully for you, I'm not asking for monetary support, but through the word of mouth and reviews. If you could please text the show to someone who might like it, please do. If you really like the show, would you mind just sharing it with someone who you don't think knows about it and might get a kick out of it? Although I'm aware those platforms are algorithmically predicated to make sure a lone wolf podcaster like myself really can't get very much exposure without having to pay them like some corner street pimp just to get an open channel. Writing a review on Apple and Spotify is worth its weight in gold. If you can, please do me a solid. Go there, give me some stars, give me some love. Go over there and write a quick review. If you like the show, no matter what, it makes a world of difference. Thank you. I appreciate it. So basically, I don't really have a midweek sort of show. This is like pre-4th of July. I'm recording this actually on July 3rd in the evening. So if you're listening to this on the 4th of July, happy 4th to you. Happy Independence Day to you. I just was scouring the news and just a couple of things came out at me, and I'm actually basically going to take my material from the printed material online. So I'll be kind of reading from the news stories a little bit. One of them is pretty cool and the other is frankly appalling. First is the cool part. Apparently, and this is going to seem like it's a brand new headline because media cycles sort of work as if something you see is like a brand new revelatory moment, and many, many times it absolutely isn't. And as I did just the modicum of research here, I found out that was indeed the case. So let's just come down to brass tacks. There is yet another possibility that the long-lost aircraft and whereabouts of Amelia Earhart could be a solved issue. I'm going to go ahead and quote from an article here. A new expedition will head to a remote Pacific island in, get this, November. I'll come back to that. In what researchers call their most promising effort yet to solve one of aviation's greatest mysteries, the disappearance of pilot Amelia Earhart and navigator Fred Noonan. It's the Purdue Research Foundation and Archaeological Legacy Institute announced Wednesday that it will investigate a visual anomaly spotted in satellite imagery of a lagoon at Nikuma Aroro, a tiny island between Hawaii and Australia. The object, dubbed the Tiaria object, matches the size and apparent composition of Amelia Earhart's Lockheed 10E Electra that vanished 88 years ago. Quote, what we have here is maybe the greatest opportunity to ever finally close the case, unquote, said Richard Pettigrew, the ALI's executive director, in a news release. With such a great amount of very strong evidence, we feel we have no choice but to move forward and hopefully return with proof. I look forward to collaborating with Purdue Research Foundation in writing the final chapter in Amelia Earhart's remarkable life story. It's a pretty cool prospect. The team plans to depart from the Marshall Islands on November 5th for a five-day inspection of the potential aircraft remains. If confirmed, excavations would begin next year to recover the aircraft. So this is 88 years ago. So Earhart and Noonan disappeared July 2nd, 1937. Mind you, Elvis Presley was 2 years old at this point. While attempting to circumnavigate the globe, the last known position was over the Pacific Ocean, and despite extensive international search at the time, no definitive evidence of their fate was ever found. The satellite image, gaining renewed attention, was captured in 2015, just after a massive tropical storm shifted the sand in the lagoon, potentially revealing part of an aircraft that had been hidden for decades. Subsequent photos show sand gradually covering the object again. It satisfies all criteria, Pettigrew told NBC News. It's just the right size. It appears to have the right composition. It appears to be metallic and shiny. The location is significant for several reasons, according to investigators. One, Nikumaroro, I cannot get this, sits very close to Earhart's planned flight path. The spot aligns with the origin of four distress calls believed to be from Earhart. I have to say it the right way. The island's remoteness could explain why the plane wasn't found during the initial searches. Let me back up for a second here. When you try to read her last name off a paper without saying Amelia first, because we say Amelia Earhart, reading the last name by itself makes me want to say Earhart. So it's just my own reflexive tics, if you don't mind. I'm not going to go back and fix this and edit it. Sorry, it's a midweek thing. Quality is down. That's all I'm going to say. Additional evidence supporting the Nikumaroro hypothesis includes a human skull and bones discovered in 1940 near an old campsite thought to be female, a woman's shoe, and a sextant navigation box found in the same area, glass bottles from the 1930s, and a U.S.-made jackknife and zipper recovered by archaeological teams. So you have that circumstantial evidence. Let's see. Oh, yeah. And there was also a medicine vial with partially legible letters, UCA Pharmacy, and apparently Earhart lived in Toluca Lake, California, and it's related to there. So it's like many pieces of evidence that by themselves are not conclusive, Pettigrew said, but taken together, they are very convincing. So there is a circumstantial case that is being built, and man, would it be cool if they go and look at that site and find her plane. It would make me so happy, just as an American, just as a matter of historical inflection point. And if they do, I'm going to come back and I'm going to tell her story. I may just tell her story anyway, because she's got such a great and interesting and varied story, and just a cool member of the American mosaic. So, however, we have to do this. Not everyone agrees with the assessment. Rick Gillespie, who has searched for Earhart for decades, including at Nikumaroro, dismissed the satellite images. We've looked there in that spot, and there's nothing there, Gillespie said. And the imagery shows a coconut tree complete with root ball. The expedition, this has got that Adam ruins everything sort of vibe to it, and he might be right, and if he is, then Grady's right, but if not, I would like to just slap him right across his mouth. Anyway, the expedition has special significance for Purdue University, where Earhart worked as a faculty member. The Purdue Research Foundation has provided funding to develop the airplane for her around-the-world attempt. Quote, we believe we owe it to Amelia and her legacy at Purdue to fulfill her wishes, if possible, to bring the Electra back to Purdue, said Stephen Schultz, senior vice president and general counsel of Purdue University. All right, so there's kind of a pretty cool story right there, and you'll see that in your headlines, and as you're scrolling social media, it's going to show up, because I guarantee you it's got an algorithmic uplift that's going to park it right into your lap. So you can read all about it. There's nothing here. I didn't even write that story. I'm just reading from another story. I just want to put this out there because it interests me. The other thing that interests me is something that, well, quite frankly, is perverse on its face. Jonestown massacre site, where over 900 people died, opens to, get this, tourism. Yeah, all right. So, in the Guyanese site of Jonestown massacre, where over 900 people died by mass suicide or murder in connection with the Jim Jones-led cult in 1978, it has now opened to tourism. After decades of abandonment, yeah, I bet it was abandoned, a private tourism company in the African nation of Guyana announced plans to host guided tours.
Ladies and gentlemen, to your left, a dead body was there. Over to your right, a dead body was there. If you look out the back without disembarking off the vehicle, you will see a giant bin where the Kool-Aid was.
Okay, anyway, so after decades of abandonment, blah, 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 they're going to host the tours, and it's a decision that has been met with, get this, controversy. No kidding. We think it is about time, as happens all over the world. Rose Sechuan, director of Wanderhurst Adventures, the tourism company providing the tour, spared no expense, told the Associated Press back in 2024, we have multiple examples of dark, morbid tourism around the world. That's actually really true, and including Auschwitz and the Holocaust Museum. So maybe I'm just using this as a point of departure because it's not... I don't know what there is to see, although there was some other things that happened in that incident that are quite interesting, and the fact that Jim Jones was not a right-wing Pentecostal preacher, he was a left-wing socialist that screamed over a mic and had a suicide pact. Longtime congressman, let's see, oh yeah, months later, Wanderlust, with approval from the Guyanese government, is offering Jonestown Memorial to tour with tourists, including flights to Guyanese capital of Georgetown and an hour-long van trip to the sparse remains of the People's Temple settlement, the New York Times has reported. Longtime congresswoman Jackie Speer, who survived a 1978 attack in Guyana, was shot multiple times while serving as an aide to U.S. Congressman Leo Ryan, who was killed by the People's Temple members when he traveled to Guyana to investigate claims of people being held against their will, among those who protested Wanderlust's decision. I am horrified because it doesn't deserve to be a tourist attraction, Speyer told KTVU in December. And for a company to think that is adventure tourism is missing the mark. The inaugural tour of Jonestown included two of Sichuan's own relatives, two journalists, two tourists, who the New York Times reported. Sichuan added that the goal of the tour was not sensationalism, but exploring the dangers of manipulation, unchecked authority, and the circumstances that led to this devastating event. So, anyway, it's quite a thing there. So, anyway, there's a couple of things in the news for you. So, if you want to go visit Jonestown, I manage you could probably get your passport dialed up and, you know. That's a sad story. And, by the way, if you do any research on the Jonestown suicide pact, you will discover very morbidly that there is an audio recording of the whole thing. And it is quite disturbing because you can hear people in the background crying and dying, including children. So on that happy note, go read the news. Things are popping, that's for sure. And this is Box Number 7.